With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This crowd rises to its feet. Totoro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect! Garland went to the lane, locked to Mobley, pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Roan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The Cleveland Cavaliers bounce back from that rough road loss against the Toronto Raptors to finish off November strong with a dominant win over the Philadelphia 76ers to improve to 14-8. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, buddy. I'll tell you what, I think this one was needed for the vibes, you know? A bit of a downswing after yet another upswing, and you go into Philly having lost two of your last three. You know, the one win you had wasn't that inspiring. Mm-hmm. You're playing, you know, Philly's been playing really good ball. Joel Embiid is back. He's been cooking people, and they stomped him. Cool 28-point win. Completely shut the water off on Philly's offense. I thought probably their best top to bottom of the rotation defensive game they've played all year. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, I don't think anyone had a bad defensive game at any level of the defense. Just super, super exciting. And man, it just shows you how devastating they can be defensively when they're really locked in. Mamadou Diakite got the start, and man is looking like a guy who might be not on a two-way much longer if he keeps putting in the spot minutes he's been putting in for this team.
Well, absolutely, and I'm thrilled for Diakite. He got the Junkyard Dog chain. I thought that was very deserved. He was big in the Detroit win as well. That was actually one of our game notes that we didn't get to in the last podcast just because we went so long on everything else. But he was great in that game, and I was very impressed with him as well in this game. I kind of expected going in that they'd have him on Embiid and kind of have Mobley as the guy on Tucker, kind of sagging off and trapping, and that was kind of what I was hoping they were doing, because Tucker, I think he had 7 attempted field goals in his last 8 games. Last 2 games hadn't attempted a shot. So if you're going to dare someone to beat you, I know he can shoot, but he's just hasn't been a willing shooter. But instead, Evan Mobley draws the assignment, and Diakite kind of allows them to play this switching, trapping defense that I thought was incredibly effective. And it took Philly a while to figure that out. Like by the time they kind of got their footing when it came to the defensive strategy that the Cavs were employing, they were already down 20 at that point.
Yeah, and in fairness, you know, if we're going to, you know, spend the first 20 minutes of of Monday's pod talking about all the open threes the Cavs missed, Philly had their fair share of open looks that they did miss. But I do think, you know, this is a really strong game plan when Philly is missing their two lead ball handlers and Embiid is so very much their engine. I thought they did a really good job just keeping him from getting the ball. Yeah. I felt like he often did not get touches with advantage, you know, like when he got the ball, typically he had, you know, Robin Lopez 2 feet in front of him and having to put up tough mid-range shots, didn't get much in the post at all. I thought the Cavs, you know, sometimes the best defense for a big man is not letting him get the ball at all, you know, like, and I thought the Cavs did a great job of that. And without overcommitting, you know, I thought their digs were all pretty well timed. You know, there wasn't a lot of overcommitting because that'll kill you. You know, I mean, I don't know if that I don't necessarily want to say that they played bad defense against Milwaukee in that first game against Giannis, but they were committing pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was able to get generate some pretty wide open threes, whereas I thought this game, you know, you gave up some and you're going to when you're playing that helping defense, but not so much that guys could get in a rhythm and start killing you. Yeah. So I thought the team was just, you know, that I think so much about defense is execution, you know, like the scheme is important, but so is making sure that you're not being reckless when you're asked to help and not helping at bad times and not helping from the wrong spots. I thought the Cavs, were so freaking sharp on that side of the ball tonight.
Yeah, they really were. And there were multiple occasions where Tucker and other guys, they passed up open threes too, right? Like it kind of looked like Philly was doubting themselves. And to your point about denying Embiid the ball, this is a guy that's only played one game since he was off for about a week and a half. It's going to take him some time to get into game shape, right? And he probably doesn't want to have to fight for position, fight to get to the ball to that extent, right? So this is the right time to kind of play that kind of ball denial defense on him while he probably isn't his full self. And when there's less help around him, right? Like, obviously, Philly's shorthanded with no Harden and Maxey. Cavs shorthanded, no Love and Allen. But this is still a Philly team, like we said after the Toronto game, that we were really expecting this to be a real fight because Philly had just beat Atlanta with this starting lineup. And
they'd won three in a row.
Yeah.
Like, and had beaten Brooklyn and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Before that. So this is still a very good Philly team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Philly, as they get healthy, I believe that they're going to be a problem, and they're going to be one of those teams that's probably going to be nipping at the Cavs' heel for the rest of the season. So getting this win is important, right? Like this, you're going to have your four matchups against them throughout the course of the season, and at the very least, you need to hold serve when it comes to defending home court. So this is a really important game. And Carter, you teased it a little bit. We talked about the open threes in the Toronto game, but after we recorded, the data was actually out there. 27 threes with a defender 6 feet away or further. In other words, classified as wide open. Cavs went 5 of 27 on those shots. I couldn't believe it. There was an additional 10 threes that NBA.com credits as open, but Seth Partnow and others have said if a defender's 4 to 6 feet, that's still a contested shot. I think cleaning the glass counts those as contested shots as well. Obviously, Cavs got a lot of looks. I think it was tired legs. Cavs tonight, 15 to 29 from three. I think a little bit more than normal instead of that 18% they shot on those looks last game.
Well, you know, it's funny, though. Even so, I think that, you know, it's their role players are still not exactly, you know, scorched in the net. Karras had a bounce back game from three. Diakite hit two, but Osman, Okoro, and Wade, I think, combined to go like 2 of 9 or 2 of 8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like all, you know, everything was hunky dory on offense. I just thought their defense made it so freaking easy for them.
Yeah.
You know, they were just abusing Philly in the passing lanes. I think that, you know, the guys who were able to hit threes were really, you know, were getting comfy looks. To you know, find their footing. And yeah, man, I've some regression in the mean. Donovan hit all five of Donovan's field goals were from three. Darius hit quite well as well. And you know, I think we obviously got to talk about Karras, because Karras had probably his best game since the Boston game.
Yeah.
And you know, at a time where the team really needed him to show you know, some signs of life after kind of having a rough stretch, then getting hurt, and then having a more rough stretch on the back end of it. So really, really, really excited for Karras. You know, this is the kind of night that, you know, he's going to have a nice, easy sleep tonight after a really, really good game for him.
Yeah, 22 points on 8-11 shooting. I don't think you can expect this every night from him. He is going to go through hot and cold spells, but this is kind of what you envision, right? That if you're moving Karis LeVert to the second unit where he's able to stagger with Garland and Mitchell, that he can give them the playmaking, the scoring, and everything that he's done this year. And honestly, like, just on a personal level, like, you end up rooting for all these guys, right? And
of course.
And Karis, what I had really liked about him this year was that he came in great shape, really committed on the defensive end. He's passing, he's playing good team basketball, but the shots just weren't falling. And then as the three-pointer abandoned him as well, the effectiveness overall just kind of fell off a cliff. So for him to kind of have this game at home, getting back into a rhythm, his second game back after the injury, You got to feel really good for him. And I still have a lot of hope. Like, I feel pretty good about the rotation eventually when this team gets healthy. If Dean Wade is in the starting lineup. I think on paper, he still makes the most sense at small forward. And Caris LeVert is a sixth man. That should be a luxury. And he's a lot better than what we've seen this year. So I expect some positive regression overall still when it comes to his efficiency on the court.
Well, this is what we talked about in the last podcast when things weren't going super awesome. That the Cavs have plenty of things that have not bounced their way so far this season, despite, at the time, a 13-8 start, obviously now a 14-8 start. So, you know, if Caris can find a little bit of rhythm, if Jarrett can come back and get healthy. And by the way, big important win, because this is a team that has really struggled to assert its will sans Jared Allen. And the fact that, you know, they were able to so clearly dominate without him, I think is very, very important, especially on the defensive end, where we have just not seen that.
And not only just on the defensive end, against the number one player, I think you'd say that you'd want to have Jared Allen against. Like, it's between him or Giannis, but Joel Embiid puts so much pressure on the way that he attacks the rim, even a different level than Jokic, because Jokic, I think, is probably the better center. I know people are going to go back and forth, and honestly, I don't have the energy to debate it. But what Jokic does, like the fact that he's operating as like an offensive hub, passing guys open and the scoring he does, that's a little different than just constantly imposing your will and getting to the free throw line and attacking the basket the way that Joel Embiid does. And this is absolutely, like, this is the number one kind of matchup where you'd want to have Jared Allen. And I think the fact that Diakite stepped up, I think the defensive adjustments they made, I think you were right to draw the comparison to what they did in that first Milwaukee game against Giannis, where they had Lamar Stevens on him and the game plan really was centered around slowing him down. They did a great job on Embiid. And I'm really happy for Diakite, because this is a situation where he's seen the path, right? Like with Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade, there's a path to guys going from two-way contract to getting a partially guaranteed deal or a guaranteed deal or a roster spot if you play good team basketball and if you buy into the Cavs culture. And with an open roster spot on available to the Cavs, he's probably motivated to step up and play in this way. And what I really like about Diakite is the ability to kind of maintain schematic continuity, because Jared Allen is such a mobile defender at the five. He's obviously not that, but he can provide you with that mobility. He provides you with shot blocking. He brings a little 3-point shooting to the table as well. Like I really like seeing him get a run here.
The fact that he hit a wing three was really exciting. In the three, it's funny. After the first couple attempts in the game, I was DMing you and said, man, these guys look like they're shooting with oven mitts on. Because it just, you know, the ball has not been, and you even saw Dean. He missed a pull-up jumper and was kind of visibly frustrated with himself. I think he's kind of fighting through it a little bit right now with his jumper. But man, Diakite was launching comfortably. He looked really, really comfortable shooting. And if he can do that, he can kind of be, you know, maybe bring a little Chris Boucher energy to the team. If that's a fair comp.
I don't hate that at all. That's actually, you know, really good.
And Boucher is a player I've always really liked for Toronto. Sometimes he does a little too much. And I don't think we're going to have that problem with Diakite right now, who seems to be, you know, very much a role guy. But like when you are a two-way player and you're thrust in the starting lineup against Joel Embiid, and you're not afraid to pull on, like, you know, moderately contested threes, I think that's a really good sign and a really good indicator that this guy might stick around. Obviously, when the team's fully healthy, I'm not sure there's minutes in the rotation for him on every given night, but, like, man, this is why every time we wring our hands about, oh, who's going to get minutes, who's going to be able to play, it's like, man, 20 games in and our two-way big is starting. It's just how the NBA goes. And I just couldn't be more happy with Diakite's minutes. And, you know, at some point, like, I just, especially while Allen's out, I just think JB's probably going to just keep playing the guy, because he is earning every minute he gets.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I, like I said, there's an open roster spot available, and I can only imagine that he's motivated to try and earn that spot. And I like it. Like, I like having another center that at least you feel good about, like, trying things out and having him out there on the court. I think there are certain matchups where the bigger body of Robin Lopez is really helpful.
Yeah. And I thought Rolo, even though he had a couple of turnovers, and I thought he played very good defense on Embiid.
Yeah.
And it's really nice being
one,
able to...
one wild pass there that really cracked me up.
Oh, my God. That was out of control.
If we weren't up as much as we were, that one probably would have stressed me out.
I don't know if he attempts the pass if we weren't up 20.
I would hope not. But, yeah, that one was a little bit wild. But there's going to be matchups where it's really helpful to have him out there eating some minutes, playing against bigger bodies. But other times, like I said, I think having continuity within your lineup where you can sub guys in and out and still kind of play the same style, the same system. The guards are going to have the same defensive responsibilities versus a traditional drop big in Robin Lopez. I think that is something that's helpful, and it's something that I'd like to see them explore a little more. Carter, I got a stat for you. And I want to see if you can predict where I'm going with this. There were 17 turnovers from the Cavs tonight, only one more than the Sixers. Do you know where I'm going with this already?
I do not.
Only 4 fast break points. You know why? Because dead ball turnovers are not that bad.
You're out of control. I also, to not react to that one bit, because you're a fool, I do actually think the Cavs played really good transition defense tonight, too. Again, like, I just think they were good in every phase of the game defensively. You know, I thought their offense was, like, good. I don't think it was, like, insane. I just think their defense was so insane that they were able to generate a lot of easy looks. And when their offense failed them, you know, I thought they covered it up pretty darn well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really, really encouraging effort from them on that side of the ball. And, you know, let's talk about our boy Evan Mobley, who got the early Embiid assignment and also poured in a very efficient 16 points on 8 of 10 from the field with another 8 boards in just 24 minutes.
Yep. Really, really impressive performance. And I got to say, man, we're tracking how many 20-point games he has. JB could have given him a few more. You know, 24 minutes, could have got that up to 28, get him his 20 points, and then we can continue tracking that. But no, he was awesome. And again, this is one of those games where...
How about that Euro step?
Oh! Got him. The Euro step by Embiid was fantastic. Like, I think it's noteworthy that he's had these games... the Miami one against Bam Adebayo, one of the best centers in the game. He was dominant in that one. And then the way that he was effective in these minutes against Joel Embiid, the way that he rebounded so well in those limited minutes, a point of emphasis for both of us. Like, I thought he played really good controlled basketball. And you were just showing the highlight on the YouTube stream, but there was a time where he had good post position on Korkmaz, but the help was coming over. And I think earlier in the season, he'd try to go up even though he was off balance, maybe try to draw a foul and throw up some kind of wild attempt. He kicked it out to Garland, reset, and got rewarded with the lob because Garland was able to attack a destabilized defense. It's that kind of stuff where we see him try to expand his game. He's going to make mistakes, but it's how he learns from those mistakes and the subtle adjustments throughout the course of an NBA season. Like, that's what you really want to see when it comes to Evan Mobley. And I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like the good offensive performances are becoming more and more frequent, and I'm really liking what I'm seeing from him.
I had some fool in my mentions during, and sorry if you're that fool in my mentions. Thanks for listening to the pod.
Yeah, shout out to the fool.
Shout out to the fool in my mentions who told me that during when he was having that rough outing in the second Milwaukee game that he always plays bad against good teams. or against good players. I'm like, I don't know. I did not, and you'll be proud of me, Justin, I did not dignify it with a response. I muted and moved on.
My petty ass would have been researching there. I would absolutely.
I said, I'm not going to engage with someone who is so clearly detached from reality. And, you know, the game against Miami, this game tonight, the first game against Milwaukee, man, this guy has been really rising to the challenge. Again, man, I know... Every podcast I'm talking about is defensive rebounding. It's not like he's like prime Wilt Chamberlain here, but like he's taken the challenge, man. In our chat, Matt Fields in the YouTube chat just said that the Cavs are number 1 over the last 3 games in defensive rating, despite no Jared Allen. And I think In no small part, that's due to the kind of impact Mobley's had on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you look at it, his defensive rebounding percentage, the numbers have now updated. He's 2.5% higher than he was last year, and he's over 2% better on offensive rebounds as well. Like, on both ends of the court, he's doing a better job rebounding, and that's massive, right? Like,
and man, he's squeezing the orange too. Like, that, there were so many plays last year where he'd go up, he'd be in position to get the board, and he wouldn't really secure it. And he is snatching that ball away from the opposing players. He's high pointing it and pulling it away, and using his reach to really secure and protect the ball. A couple of rebounds like that tonight that would be Embiid offensive rebounds and putbacks became ended possessions, and that's the kind of thing that takes a game from competitive to a blowout.
Yep, and we talked about it before, but the number of close losses the Cavs had last season of 5 points or less, like, it was a lot of them, and they won their share of close games. But the fact that the Cavs weren't a strong rebounding team, they didn't shoot particularly well at the free throw line, like, those were small improvements that could make a real difference when it comes to getting a higher seeding or even competing for home court in the playoffs, which I think is very clearly the goal at this point. But the fact that Mobley is rebounding so much better, you have Donovan Mitchell, who's a really good rebounder from a guard, like, that's the kind of stuff that can really, really make a big difference and make your season a lot more fruitful. Like, I love what I'm seeing from Mobley. I'm really, really excited. And you have to imagine, like, as this team gets a little healthier, as there's more help around them, they can have more games like this where guys don't have to play extended minutes and can get some rest. And life's going to get easier. Life's going to get easier for Mobley. He's a supercomputer out there, man. Like, the rate that he learns from stuff on the court really, really impresses me. And I think there were quite a few examples of it tonight against the Sixers.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I just thought, he was at 24 minutes because he got into foul trouble in the third, and, then he didn't need to bring him back out for the fourth. But, man, what did I think he was impactful.
Carter, you might think that in a blowout I have no bitter gripes. I would leave my petty behind. I got a little bit of petty.
You might think that. Go ahead.
I got a little bit of petty for you. I didn't think any of the calls were particularly egregious with Embiid tonight. But I can't help but think, growing up, it was just like common knowledge that, Shaq, he's going to get hit on the arm every play, but he's so big you can't call fouls on that. We had the same thing with LeBron. He gets attacked every time he goes to the rim. I just still can't get my head over someone as big as Embiid with the Trae Young whistle. Like, just, I can't understand it as a concept, and that it just blows my mind.
Moving on, Darius Garland. I'm not engaging in a complaint about referees in a game where they only took 18 free throws. No. That is a gift from God, and we are not talking about it any further. We are going to gently smile and nod at the basketball gods, Justin.
Carter, know what else is a gift from God? The support we get from Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Let's talk some Darius Carter. You take it away.
Oh, man, just a total, he finished the night with 21-9, so-so numbers. Yeah, but, man, I felt like this was such a control-the-game type of game for Darius. It was the play where that you mentioned where Mobley had the post up with the two Sixers guarding him, kicks it out to Darius, and Darius kicks it right back for an oop as he drives. Like, I just felt like he was in full maestro mode tonight and really made it so anytime Philly was, entertaining a comeback, he kind of just shut it down.
No, he was fantastic. He was in full control. There were multiple passes that made me kind of yelp. The one under the basket to Dean Wade was great. And if there was a vibes are immaculate moment in this game, it was the underhand lob to Okoro. Like, that was so much damn fun. And, like, he throws lobs in so many different creative ways, but when he throws them underhand, it's another level of fun. I continue to just be so impressed by Garland. And I think it's really kind of snuck under the radar because you have Donovan Mitchell playing at an all NBA level. You've seen the progress with Evan Mobley. Like, there's so much to talk about with the Cavs. This focus on, oh, who's going to kind of take over at small forward and what's the rotation going to look like? That, like, there's a lot of interesting conversations, but I think it slid a little under the radar that I think Garland may have taken another step forward in his game. Like,
yeah, I think he's playing better than he than he did last year on a night to night base. If you're watching this highlight reel on YouTube, I'm just, you know, it's just a super cut of his assist tonight. What's crazy is I think six or seven of them were for layups, and the other ones were for wide open threes. like you know, there were no friendly home scorekeeper assists for John Stockton, here. Like, these were all, you know, high value assists that, you know, made things super duper easy for his teammates. Not even like the kind of passes where you hit the guy and then he's got to get set because you didn't give it to him in the shooter's pocket. Like, everything was perfect from him tonight. And yeah, I just couldn't be more pleased with the way Darius controlled the game as a playmaker tonight. Like, that was pure point guard stuff. Like, you know, we talk about, my favorite comp for Darius is Steve Nash. Mm-hmm. I've always felt like when he's controlling the offense, that is who he reminds me of most. Yeah. Especially not as a volume scorer kind of guy. You know, Nash is the kind of guy who could ruin your life putting up 21-9. Mm-hmm. I thought Darius just ruined Philly tonight with his play, and man, he was good. 21-9 and only two turnovers. That is chef's kiss stuff out of him.
Yeah, and Shake Milton and Melton, like, those guys can play defense, right? Like,
good defenders.
They can be very disruptive, and I think that's actually been a big part of Philly's success and the fact why they were on that three-game winning streak, right? Like, they're playing really well, and I expect when Harden and Maxey are back that the play of those guys is going to let Philly stagger them, because I think it's just a little too much to ask of Embiid and some of these other guys defensively to cover for Harden and Maxey together for a lot of time. So having those guys, I think, is going to help Philly in the long run. But you're right. Like, Garland is playing great basketball this year. And I think it's fun that we're now a quarter of the way through the season. And you look at Garland, career high in points, career high in efficiency. Mitchell, career high in points, career high in efficiency. Mobley, I think, is now slightly on a career high in points, but his efficiency is way up. Like, all these guys, even though it hasn't completely clicked as a unit and they haven't had enough time together as a unit, individually, they're all playing really well. And I think at this point, we can put some of the concerns with Garland and Mitchell to rest. Like, there's still going to be times when it's close at the end of
games.
Anybody
got any?
Yeah.
I don't have any right now.
Yeah, like, I think there's still some ironing out to do, probably when it's fourth quarter, close game, like, kind of who goes when kind of situation and figuring out that kind of stuff. But overall, like, they're such a natural fit. And I think kind of our optimism on what kind of learning curve would be needed was well-founded, because, like, they just are such smart basketball players that can play on and off the ball, and they seem to have such good chemistry with each other on and off the court. It's really exciting to see what this duo can do. And, man, they're still so damn young.
Yeah, they really are. You're watching these guys figure it out in real time. You're watching them, you know. This, I think, again, we talk about it. We talked about it in the preseason, but the fact that, you know, Darius comes in with, you know, with no ego into this relationship, not trying to prove that he's, you know, he's the boss, he's in charge, you know, doing the Macarena post game with his boy, you know, just like, just a good vibes guy and welcoming another good vibes guy in. And man, that's all you can ask for. Yeah. Like these are the kind of stars you want to root for. These are the kind of players that, you know, like, Darius's off ball movement is just so good. They ran a really great set. I'll see if I can pull it up in real time for our friends on YouTube. One of the plays that set up one of Darius's threes where Diakite screened for Donovan and then immediately pulled up in screen. Here it is. I found it. Haha. Diakite screens for Donovan, then immediately sets a pin down for Darius while Embiid is focused on helping on Donovan. Just tell me JB Bickerstaff can't coach with this play. Tell me JB Bickerstaff can't run an offense. That thing was beautiful. In fact, I'm going to watch it again because like it was just such a pretty shot, such a pretty play that like it's exactly the kind of thing you want to see. Yeah. These two have figured out how to work together very, very organically. It's just really exciting, man.
Yeah, it is really exciting. And one guy we haven't mentioned yet tonight was Isaac Okoro. I thought he had a very good bounce back game. 11 points, 3 steals for our boy Ice, 5 rebounds. He's been rebounding a lot better, 2 assists, 5 of 7 shooting, 1 of 3 from 3. Attempted another step back. He seems to have his confidence back, which I think is the biggest thing, because I think him not being able to play in the Brooklyn and Atlanta play-in games kind of rewrote and retconned what his season was overall, which wasn't dominant by any stretch of the imagination. He still was just a 10-point-per-game player, but he wasn't a 3-point-per-game player. And he was someone that routinely the Cavs were better with him on the court. And again, plus 20 tonight, really effective on both ends of the court, getting out in transition. Like, this is the Isaac Okoro that we should expect as a baseline. And I feel a lot better about where he's at right now. Like, he seems to be out of his funk. That offensive rebound dunk, the putback was amazing. I feel good about it. And I'm feeling pretty good about this roster in general, man. Like, the fact that we made it through from kind of a rest standpoint and travel standpoint, probably the toughest month where you have extended road trips, a lot of back-to-backs. I think the most back-to-backs they have in any individual month. The fact that you're 6 games over 500 here is really encouraging.
Yeah, I think Isaac's offensive game was, you know, very strong. I thought his defensive game was very good. I don't have the deflection numbers in front of me, but if he had 3 steals, it felt like he had 3 or 4 more deflections. And you know, I'm always looking for him to get in passing lanes a little bit more and use his defensive instincts to, you know, create possession advantages. That's one way that if you're gonna be a limited shooter, which right now Isaac remains, you know, a more limited shooter than he was even last year, mm-hmm. just by the numbers.
Yep.
If you're going to be a limited shooter that is, you know, shrinking spacing for your team on offense, you have to be someone that generates extra possessions to kind of make it, you know, make the juice worth the squeeze. And make it worthwhile. You know, fundamental defense is nice, but you know, it's really, really valuable if you can generate 2-3 fast break buckets a game. You know, that those are basically your points all of a sudden. If you're really disrupting offensive possessions and forcing turnovers. And I thought he did that tonight. Again, without overcommitting, without playing too aggressive and fouling, which has been his bugaboo pretty much all year. When things aren't going well, super exciting game for Isaac. Obviously, no guarantee this is going to persist. He's coming off, you know, a real backslide game against Toronto where he went 1 of 11 from the field, but he shot 5 threes, and I was actually happy with that. So, like, you know, it's just a matter of finding some offensive consistency. But like, again, this is not the same, you know, lost player who wasn't helpful on either end that we saw earlier in the year. I think we're back to normal with Isaac, and normal is a welcome change.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's nice to see this bounce back so soon after that Toronto game, right? Like, there wasn't the, oh, well, now I'm afraid to shoot, and I didn't shoot well in that game. He was out there. He was immediately effective in this game. He was assertive, and that's what we want to see. And I continue to think, like, it's so much, you have to pay such a premium if you're bringing in wing help, whether it's free agency or on the trade market. Like, he's still one of the youngest guys on this team by a pretty wide margin.
Second youngest, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, second youngest behind Mobley, just a couple months older than Mobley. You got to find out exactly how much juice is there to squeeze. And I just... The thing is, like, I understand he's the 5th overall pick, and that is going to color expectations. But at the same time, if he's someone that consistently tries hard, that's obviously a positive part of team culture. You see Mitchell cite him as the funniest guy on the team. Everyone cites him as one of the hardest workers. Like, that's a guy you want to have around, and you might have to reduce the role based on how much he develops. But it's worth exploring exactly what you have there. And I just don't think that there's a real negative to it, especially in a season where we're really trying to assess what's on the roster. Getting Isaac going, which I think he has over the last couple of weeks, is really encouraging. And if you can start to build this foundation where the baseline is higher and you don't worry about him being on the court, which I think we're past that point, now that the foundation's in place, you can actually kind of move forward and build and see what he can be this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially while the team's, you know, working their way back to, you know, full health. I think that, you know, he's fulfilling a role, and that's really all we asked of him at the beginning of the year, is just like, hey, like, be at least good enough to be the stopper off the bench. You can set a defensive tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did that. I think we should, before we wrap talking about tonight, start looking forward. I think we have to talk about one other player that we haven't hit on yet. And that's Ricky Rubio. Look at this sweatsuit, Justin.
He looks
Someone,
so comfy.
Get me the shop link. I can't tell if that's just straight sweat material or if this man went ham on some velour or something. But my goodness, let me do the next Chase Down Pod with this outfit on. I will be as comfy as can be. He and Kevin both were rocking sweatsuits tonight on the bench. Just looked like two, wealthy fans just chilling. Couldn't be more comfortable watching their boys run Philly off the floor. Get me this sweatsuit, Justin.
And you know what? It's a sign of solidarity too with Jaren Allen, who got roasted for his All-Star weekend fit. They're showing how you could be even more comfortable on the sideline. And I broke my rule of not tweeting at players. I had to add Ricky and ask, drop the link, like, do this. I've never been as comfortable as he looks there. Carter, you did have an interesting tweet before we went live of watching Boston's offensive rampage over all other teams makes me feel even better about how the Cavs played them in their two wins. And that made me look something up, which was how many times this season through 22 games has a team outperformed their offensive rating for the season against the Cavs? And there's only four teams that have done it, which does make sense that it would be in losses, but it's the Bucks twice, it was Sacramento, it was the LA Clippers, as well as Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I think that's really impressive because they've played some genuinely good offenses this season. They've done it with guys in and out of the rotation. As we mentioned, a lot of different starting lineups, 12 through 22 games. And like Boston, as an example, they are putting up a historic offensive season.
The best offensive rating in NBA history as on current pace. They're 121.5. It would blow the previous best of, I think, 117 set by the Nets last year instantly. Mm-hmm. Out of the freaking water against the Cavaliers. We have held them to 107.5. That would be good for 29th in the NBA in those two games. So super, super exciting stuff out of the Cavs defense. And in fact, we're really one of the only teams that has slowed them down a little, and mm-hmm. we've done it twice. My goodness.
Which is interesting, too, because the biggest concern is what do the Cavs do against big wings? And Boston's a team that has a bunch of them. And they did a good job. Like, I thought Dean was very good on Tatum in those games. And
well, Justin, Jason Tatum, a 30-point scorer, scored like 32. So we can't stop him. That's what Twitter tells me.
With him being only 19, you know he's going to be around for a long time, too. But, yeah, it's I think they've done a really good job defensively. And looking forward, because we'll be back podcasting on Monday, I believe, next. Now that November has wrapped up, December to me, Carter, jumps out as the month where the Cavs really have to make a push in the standings. I think this is a real big opportunity for them because you look at the 14 games in December, 10 of them are at home. They have a 2-week homestand starting December 16th where they'll be home. And we had talked about it a little bit in the Toronto game, how Toronto had been home for over a week and hadn't played a ton. But the other benefit to being home that long is you actually get to practice. Like those days off become a little bit more productive if there isn't travel mixed in and all that. That's a spot where you can really kind of get your footing. And if the Cavs can go, let's say, with the 10 home games and 4 road games, if you go 8-2 at home and 2-2 on the road, which I think is modest expectations, all of a sudden you jump up to 24-12. You're 12 games over 500. The Cavs last year didn't get their 24th win until they were 24-18, and they were 20-16 after 36 games. Like, if the Cavs go that, if December goes that well for the Cavs, it's going to be pretty hard for enough teams to catch them in the standings that they can drop in a meaningful way, in my opinion, knock on wood.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the schedule, and they also, like, they've been playing some real doozy teams, and, like, that is part of just, like, new NBA life, where you have 26 NBA teams that are pretty good somehow. Yeah. But, you know...
Yeah, to be clear, I'm not counting my chickens before they're hatched. Like, there are no bad teams in the league. Any team can beat you. But
with that said, versus Orlando, at New York, versus a Lakers team that's reeling again, versus Oklahoma City, at San Antonio, versus Utah, who have been reeling without Mike Conley. Like, these are some games that you look at and you go, okay, like, these are, like, again, like, you go, you, I think we always, on this podcast, we always avoid saying, like, you know, counting chickens before they hatch and calling out wins that, you know, are by no means guaranteed, but those are all should win games. Mm-hmm. For a team of this Cavaliers caliber, if they're even as healthy as they are right now.
Yep.
So that is really, really encouraging, because, you know, if they steal a couple that maybe are a little tougher, obviously at Dallas jumps out at you. You know, then all of a sudden this starts to look really, really, really good. And man, would I love to steal one, you know, take one from Milwaukee in the friendly confines of Romo Fijo. Yeah. after the last two second halves against that team.
Yeah, I kind of love the fact that you have that home stretch where you play Indiana, who is on the Cavs' heels.
Yeah, fifth seed Indiana. So there's a reason I didn't shout them out, guys. They're killing everyone.
Second best backcourt in the league, Carter. Mathurin and Tyrese Haliburton, right behind Garland and Mitchell. My Canadian bias is leaking through. But you got
a smidge.
You got Indiana, you got Dallas, you got Utah. You kind of have that home week to gain some good teams there. Like, none of those are slouches. But you kind of have that little stretch where you can prepare for that next week where you play Milwaukee, Toronto, and Brooklyn, three games in a row there. I'm excited for that, because that's a real kind of measuring stick opportunity. None of those games are back-to-backs, with the exception of the Dallas game, but at least it's a home back-to-back. Like, not a lot of excuses or context in those situations, and a real opportunity for the Cavs to make a statement. And like I said, you go 10-4 in December, all of a sudden you're 12 games over 500. You're laughing. Like, that's a really great position to be in. So I'm interested to see how they do in December, because even though these aren't slouches, this is a real, real opportunity for the Cavs to make some noise and establish themselves. Like, you do well here, you're getting Ricky Rubio back at some point, and you can really, really kind of evaluate where you stand in the NBA prior to the trade deadline and All-Star break. So I'm very excited for what this can be. And it all starts Friday when they take on the Orlando Magic at home once again.
Yeah, and that, you know, you have to come out hot. Orlando did give them a game.
Yeah.
We were at that game. Paolo is awesome. Bol Bol is going absolutely bananas as of late.
Markel Fultz is back, and he's been very, or he was very good last time we saw him play. Probably will take a little bit, but he's a real player, and he was a big part of Orlando kind of playing spoiler against the Cavs down the stretch last season.
Yeah, I know that's a team that is near the bottom of the league right now, you know, among the worst point differentials in the league, but I really do think they are of the cellar dwellers in the league right now. Houston, San Antonio, Detroit, Orlando. I think them and Houston are both very explosive teams that can, on the right night, you go, "Wait, why are we losing to Houston?" And all their talent just happens to gel, because both those teams have built up super talented bases that, man, if either of them gets Wemby, they are going to... I really hope it's Houston, because I do not want to deal with a starting five in Orlando of 6'10 freaks. 6'10 and taller freaks that can handle and shoot.
I wouldn't want to deal with Scoot in Orlando either. You know, Jalen Suggs is putting it together. I still hold a lot of Jalen Suggs.
Hey, can all these really good players just stop? The Cavs are good right now, and we don't have picks for a while. So if we can just, like,
Yeah.
Just turn off the talent pipeline to the league for a couple years. I would appreciate it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm here for that. Except for, of course, the 1 year where the Cavs had their pick.
Naturally, in that case, we're gonna need to find some way to jump into the lottery without missing the playoffs. We're gonna do some voodoo.
And again, let's make that be the double draft year. Let's stack the deck completely.
Let's do it. Come on, guys.
Let's run that back.
Adam.
Big thanks to everyone tuning in live on YouTube. And also a big thanks to everyone sharing the Chase Down on your Spotify Wrap. That's one Dude, of them. Yeah, go
one
ahead.
One of my favorite days of the year because I don't listen. I don't use Spotify. So it always catches me by surprise, and it's always one of my most fond days seeing everyone who has us in the top five of their favorite podcasts. It's so cool. So thanks to everyone who tweeted that out and always brings a smile to this old bitter heart.
It's ridiculously humbling. We really appreciate you guys. You're the absolute best. The fact that we crack anyone's top five will continue to blow my mind forever. So big thanks to you guys, and a big thanks to everyone tuning in live on YouTube. If you want to support the podcast, like, subscribe, click notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, you can leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.